Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Big week in the hockey world. We've got the Board of Governors gathering in the National Hockey League, and Olympic federations are paring down their rosters. What are you putting more emphasis on, John?
Well, first of all, the Board of Governors, what are they doing in Colorado Springs? I mean,
yeah, seriously, it's a little different the last couple of times.
Unless the ski hills are already open. But I think those guys used to love being at the Breakers and having a nice little respite in the sun, but Colorado Springs sounds pretty good to me anyway. But that's that to me. I don't expect anything to come out of the governor's meetings. The owners that are there, the governors that are there, will voice the opinions that they're upset about the schedule. Obviously, there are going to be regular routine stuff. Coley Campbell will give his hockey operations update and officiating and whatever, and then they'll all get a little more information about the collective bargaining agreement, which
I thought expansion might be on this, but the agenda does not include it.
That doesn't mean an owner won't ask about it. And invariably, an owner will ask about it because, it's not rumored, Gary has already said it's going to at least begin with a 2, with a B after that. That would mean at least $125 million per team. If there's two teams joining the NHL. So from that perspective, if an owner thinks that he sees $125 billion at the end of the rainbow, he's going to ask the question. So
when can we do this? Twice.
Yeah. So, because it would not surprise me in the next decade that we're at 36 teams. So it wouldn't. I'm not saying it's going to happen next Tuesday, but I would not be surprised in the next decade that the National Hockey League is at 36.
A decade is a long time. Give me a tighter focus than that.
No, because you have to worry.
A decade's ridiculous.
Well, you have to worry about where are the players coming from? Is the pool of talent available that quickly? I think a little bit might.
Blah blah blah.
No,
5 years or sooner. Will it happen?
Well, listen, let's say we decide we're going to Atlanta, okay? If we make the decision this summer and we send to our buddy, Mr. Krause, you're getting a team, it's going to cost you $2.2 billion. Yeah. They haven't started the arena yet, Darren.
Okay, 5 years.
Yeah, so five years for the first two, yes. 5 years for the first two, and then I'm waiting 5 years for the next two. So, by the way, 5 and 5 is 10. And last I checked,
10 is like you're giving me this massive gaze. What will the world look like in 10 years? I want to know within my focus, 5 years.
For two.
So we'll get two.
For two, yeah.
Do you really think they'll go 4?
Not at the same time.
No, but
I do. I do think that there's something in the water that says if there are 29 professional teams in basketball in the United States and 29 professional teams in baseball in the United States, there's all good reason to put 29 hockey teams in the United States. And so 29 and 7, last I checked, is 36. Ta-da!
All right, what are your teams? Atlanta, Houston.
Yeah, and then I'm going to wait and see. Because
No. Give me two teams now.
I can't. I can't.
No, off the top of your head, there's a way to just say Kansas City.
Well,
or Portland.
Well, you just said two. So if you want those two. I've actually changed my mind. I think it'll be 28-8.
Oh, where's the team in Canada?
Toronto?
Yeah. Nice.
Should be.
All right. Atlanta, Houston, Portland, Toronto. Let's get that done.
But I will tell you, you know.
It's ridiculous. Toronto doesn't have a second team. Or the Toronto area. It wouldn't be in Toronto. It would be Markham or Barrie or somewhere around there.
Not Barrie. You're not going to Barrie.
Why not?
You'd be better off in Burlington. So.
Be somewhere in that GTA.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's face it, they should have by now been in Markham. Markham City Council screwed it up. They screwed it up.
They did.
The arena would have been built. The team would have been there. I truly believe that.
That building was going to be like 6 minutes from my house.
Yeah, but you live in Vegas. How far are you from the arena now?
Now I'm a couple of hours, give or take a delay.
A couple of hours?
But from Windridge Drive to where that building was going to be, it was 6 minutes.
Yeah. No. I recall everything. And you drive, and people outside of the GTA are going to be bored with this. You drive across the 407 and you see the development that has occurred in downtown Markham. You go, wow, there couldn't have been an arena there.
Do you think it would have happened had they built the rink? Because there's no guarantee. Quebec City is the great example of that. Kansas City built a rink. They don't have it.
Kansas City, but Kansas City's now at the point where I believe Kansas City's building, which used to be called the Sprint Center, I'm not sure what it's called anymore. They have done such a good job with events in Kansas City that arena makes money without a professional sports team in it, without a basketball team, and without a hockey team. And the answer is yes, it would have worked, and yes, it would have been done.
You think the Leafs would have been convinced?
Yes, I do. There's nothing that money can't solve. Nothing that money can't solve. And it would have been fantastic for the game. It would have been great.
I'll be nicer to you if you pay me more. Just saying. There's nothing money can't solve.
I'll remember that.
We've got JD coming up in just a little bit. After we're done talking to him, please get me to the subject of Brad Marchand, because I've got this take on the Florida Panther forward that I feel like the world needs to hear. And he did something on the weekend that I've never seen before.
Yeah. Did I see it? Did I, when I watched the game, did I see it?
I don't know whether you noticed it or not, but it was really it. But we'll hold off on that, and we'll get to JD here on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Welcome back to 100% Hockey. John Shannon, joined by John Davidson, who is a Foster Hewitt Award winner, played in the National Hockey League, Stanley Cup finalist. See, if you say Stanley Cup finalist, that means you didn't win.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And that's in the back of the mind now since 1979. That's a long time.
I still remember Serge Savard skating up to you, right?
Oh, yeah. He thought he had scored, and they said it hit the post. I thought it hit the post. And then there was another one that he came down. He had Guy Lafleur with a two-on-one. And I fully expected the pass, which wasn't very intelligent. He didn't pass. He scored. And to this day, whenever I see Serge, and he's one of the all-time great people, he rubs it in, and he rubs it in, and he rubs it in. And that's a lot of years ago. But I have an immense amount of respect for Serge. He's been a good friend. He was a great, great player. And he's still serving the game in a lot of different ways.
Speaking of serving the game, you're back in the broadcast booth. What the heck?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, actually, John. I did a few games last year. Jody Shelley, of course, works with Prime, and those are Monday nights. And if the Blue Jackets have a Monday night game, Jody leaves to do Prime. So they called me and said, listen, what do you think? I said, you know what? I'd love that. I just love it. It gets me out of the house a little bit. And
Diana loves that.
Yeah, that's there's a mark on the back of my, you know what, on the way out. it's a little rusty at times, but it's great. We did a game recently in New Jersey and Columbus in New Jersey, and it was a rough and rocky game, man. There was four scraps in that one. I loved it. It was like being back in the old days. And You know, it's enjoyable to get into the room and talk to players. I don't talk too much to the other team's players. I do a lot of homework, but I'm still working for Columbus, so I don't feel comfortable about doing that. And so I do the games, and we'll see where it goes. I've really, really, really enjoyed it. I can tell you that. You're talking to players, you're talking to coaches, you're having good conversations, you're seeing the game and what the good parts of the game are, and that speed, man, is it fast today. Mm. And I thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it.
There is something to be said about going to the rink and talking to people, isn't there?
There really is. And people are comfortable. You're not there to perform brain surgery by any means, but you're there to do the job. You're there to spread the message of who these players are, along with what the game's about. I've never been one to walk into a game fully expecting what's going to happen, because you don't know. Every game's got a different story. But there's also there's a lot of story. Jet Greaves has been a pretty good story with Columbus and goal. There's a million things to talk about with Jet. His dad's a goaltender now. He started in a rec league at 30 years of age. So just little things like this where you can tell stories. And I've really enjoyed that. John, it's the other thing is, and you know it better than I do, most likely, but it's still a team. When you go broadcast a game, there's a group of people that put that game on the air until it's off the air. And it's a team. You have your general manager, which is your producer. You've got your director, who is your coach. You've got camera people and these tape people, and they're the penalty killers and the power play specialists and the checkers. And I love being around the team of TV people because they care. They work hard. They don't get a lot of notoriety. Obviously, the broadcasters do. But it's a team, and I like being around teams.
All right. So what is it about the Blue Jackets this year? Where do you think they are? They're over 500, but it's going to be a fight to get into the playoffs. Yeah.
They've lost three games in regulation in their last 15, and they're not gaining anything because they've blown a lot of leads. And the good news is they've had the leads that they've blown. They're not coming from behind, which would be the bad news. And until they get that figured out, it's going to be a problem. I think a classic example, and I went to the game in Florida the other night, or the other afternoon, pardon me, Saturday afternoon, 3:30, 4-1 lead, 6-4 lead, and lost in the closing seconds of overtime. So there's a point gone, and there's 2 points that go to Florida, who's in the race. Then they had to play in Washington the next night and deserved at least a tie, maybe even a win. Thompson, the both goalies, Thompson and Greaves, were great. Thompson was sensational. And so what happens is when you blow a game like they did against Florida, then you lose the next night, even though you deserved at least a point, maybe two, then you end up with one out of four. And so you can't afford to keep these games that you have the lead with and blow them. I think the Blue Jackets have an immense amount of young talent that are really good players. They're coming along. Some of the moves, bringing Charlie Coyle, and we were there when we were talking about getting Monahan. There's been a lot of good things, but it hasn't quite gelled yet. And you're a third of the way through the season. For some reason, it just hasn't quite gelled, and I can't give you an answer. I'm not there enough. I'm not in the room enough. But at the end of last season, a number of those games when they were in the race and they just missed, they were clicking on a lot of different areas, and it's not quite there right now.
You said you were there in Sunrise on Saturday. What do you make of the Stanley Cup champions?
A little bit of fatigue. They played a lot of hockey. They've got a lot of injuries. what happens with injuries, of course, it gives opportunity to other players so you can see how they can do it. But how do you replace a Barkov? How do you replace a Tkachuk? You can give other people minutes, but they're not going to do what those guys do. Mm-hmm. So I think that their game plan, from my point of view, looking in from the outside, would be, let's just get in. Mm-hmm. Let's get in. Let's work to get in. And if we get in and we get healthy, it'd be like what Vegas has done a number of seasons now. Fight to get in and then get some guys back, and all of a sudden you become dangerous. So there's good things there. Marchand's still playing real well. Reinhardt's playing well. They've got some good things, but they need great players back in the lineup like anybody would.
You know, they went to a Stanley Cup final on the last day. Dare I remind you, it was Columbus and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And the Panthers that were fighting for that last spot, right?
Yep. And it was almost a miracle that first time when they got in. I mean, it was a miracle. They needed a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Next thing you know, it happened. And they got in and took advantage of it. I've been involved with the Blue Jackets, not so much as in the past, last year, and just missed. The worst one was when we missed what year was it? And Minnesota had to beat Colorado or somebody. Anyway, the team we wanted to win lost, and we missed by a point again. Or no, we missed the tiebreaker.
Right.
A tiebreaker to get into the playoffs. That is frustrating. That's when you go home and you can't get it out of your system for a month or two.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, this point system with what we now define as the mushy middle, there are 22 teams like that. There's going to be 22 teams claiming that they missed the playoffs by one point. I mean, it's hard right now.
Yeah, the only I think we're seeing games that are so tight, and if your special teams aren't going, you got a problem. That's how tight these games are. And then we're starting to see some clunkers, the odd clunker. I mean, we had one in Washington about 3 weeks ago. It was a clunker. We couldn't do anything. Couldn't make a pass. And I think every team, maybe except for Colorado to this point, has had a clunker or two, and that's to do with the schedule. Schedule is tight, and it's hard. And you can't expect any team, unless you're Colorado, to go and play all out every night and have that 3-2 win or 3-2 loss or go to overtime. Some nights you just hit the wall. I mean, our team played a home game. Got on the plane. It was an overtime game. Got over on the plane and went to Winnipeg for the next night. Mm-hmm. And they had 3 days rest. Our team had to go through customs, do the whole thing, get there at 3 a.m., whatever it is. And I wouldn't say it's not a fair fight, but it was a tough game to try to win. And they didn't. They didn't win. But you every once in a while, you're going to see teams have a clunker, just a clunker, because they try, but it's physically demanding. It's mentally demanding to play the schedule we're playing. And I fully understand it. I get the Olympics and everybody wanted it. And but you pay a price at times.
So as in your other jobs in St. Louis and in Columbus and with the Rangers, how involved were you with the schedule and what the schedule how involved is the clubs pushing back saying we can't do this or we can do that?
Yeah. It's complicated, but you're always involved. I talked to Don Waddell not too long ago on the schedule that the Blue Jackets have this year, and he worked it along with a guy named J.D. Kershaw, who's done it for years with the Blue Jackets. And when you call a league and you talk about, okay, how many teams are on the average with 3 and 4 nights? How many with 4 and 6? How many with back-to-backs? How many with back-to-backs where your second one's on the road? And we're right in the middle. We're right in the middle of everybody else. So that does not give you the right to complain. You just can't complain because it's the same for everybody. But there's times when you do push back. I'm sure, and I didn't ask Don this one, but I'm sure they pushed back about that game in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the schedule maker, it's so complicated, and they just can't make a change. What's complicating it all too, John, and you'd know way more about this than I would, is the TV schedules with everybody involved. Everybody on both sides of the border, they have to have certain nights, and you have to have this. And if you're building, you have to submit to them, the league, how many Mondays you have available, how many Tuesdays, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then they do their business. And it's a complicated thing, becoming more complicated with the more networks that are involved. And they pay a lot of money. So they deserve some nights where they're the they get a little bit of like Prime shows up for Canada. They're Monday nights.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, you got to deal with it. It's just how it works.
And on top of that, you still have responsibilities to your ownership group to use your arena on non-hockey nights. There's always concerts.
Yeah. In Columbus, there's lots of nights where they have concerts and this and that, but it's not New York or it's not Montreal or Toronto or Chicago or, you know, where there's a basketball team. I mean, you still have that at the Garden in New York. You have a Knicks playing in the afternoon, Rangers at night, same day. So, yeah, there's a lot of that stuff going on. I think Toronto's a pretty busy building. Washington's a busy building. A lot of them are. And that, as you mentioned, that complicates another step or two. It's a tough act to figure that one out.
We're with John Davidson on 100% Hockey back after this. 100% Hockey, Shannon here. Millard's away for a couple of minutes. John Davidson joins us. John, the other part about your life with a club, the Blues, the Blue Jackets, Rangers, is the draft. You know, I as you know, I do lots of work in Edmonton, and so people are bitching and complaining right now that the Oilers traded away a draft pick to Minnesota, and Minnesota took Jesper Wallstedt with that draft pick, and why couldn't they take Wallstedt instead in that spot? But the metrics of running a draft and the subjective nature of a draft is not anything that should be taken lightly, is it?
It's a very difficult business. You have people that are helping your team prepare for the draft that have done this for decades. Decades going around the world, checking on these young kids, seeing how good they are, trying to figure out character, trying to talk to school teachers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is hard. This is not the NFL where they're drafting 22-year-olds who step into play in the league the next year. These are 18-year-olds or younger. It is really, really, really a tough business. And I think what we try to do is, and have done it over the year, talking to Jarmo Kekäläinen, who has run the draft for many years, to Ville Sirén, who's worked with the Blue Jackets and the Blues, and many other people, is, okay, what happened that year with Pasternak? How did so many teams miss on him? And look what he's done in Boston. So you sit there and you have a real honest conversation about it and try to really figure these things out. To see
what happens, what, the kid not mature enough, didn't grow up, what, too small.
It's a combination of all these different things. You know, sometimes it's hard to go and see people. Was he hurt for a portion of that year? Did that scout who was in that area not do the job? A lot of times, what you have is what they call area scouts. Mm-hmm. They recommend to your group this player in Port Alberni, or this player in Calgary, or this player in London, go see him. So you have a number of your scouts that are what they call a crossover. They're the ones that take all the information from the base scouts, and they have to cross over and go to Ontario, go to Sweden, go to British Columbia, and see all these people so they can fill out their reports and put those players against other players because they've seen them all. Mm-hmm. Now, the base guys who stay in Western Canada don't go to Ontario, or they don't go to Quebec, or they don't go to Finland. So they can't take Joe Blow playing in Regina and compare him to a Joe Smith or whomever it is playing in Quebec. So yeah. That's kind of how the system works. It's a tough business. A lot of times now, here's what I think too, John, is that you're seeing a lot of teams now sign players, young players, to long contracts, and they're tying them up. So there's going to be fewer and fewer really good free agents because these young guys are all tied up. What does that put pressure on your draft? Mm-hmm. I think the draft's going to become more and more and more important than it's ever become. And then you have to find a way. Do you stay patient? Do you get? We have a kid, Lindstrom, who was drafted out of Medicine Hat. He's playing in Michigan State. He had a bad back, right? And it's come along real well. Now, after this year, there's going to have to be a meeting with Caden, with the team and his representative. And does he go back for another year, or is he ready to come out and turn pro? These are the types of things you have to make decisions on. And your franchise has to be really, really, really strong-minded to, if you're going to call a guy up at a certain age and he's young, live with it, make sure he gets his development, or do you leave him out and leave him go back to junior for a year, go back to college or wherever it is? These are tough decisions, especially when you're going through a rebuild, when these fans, and who can blame them, and ownership to a degree, they want to see these people that you've waited and been horrible in the standings and get a good pick. They want to see them. They want to see them come there. I go all the way back to the days of Manny Malhotra when he was drafted by the Rangers. Mm-hmm. One of the true good people in the business and doing a pretty good job coaching from what I understand. And has a son that's going to be a big time draft pick coming up. And, maybe we in New York, we got ahead of ourselves with Manny, had him turn pro maybe a little bit too early. And sometimes the agents push it. The ownership wants it. The fans want it. The writers want it. You have to, I think, with experience, like I know a lot more now than I used to know, have to make those decisions and stick with it no matter what anybody else says.
And so define stick with it. Is that a chronological period? I mean, you have to say, okay, we got to stick with a guy for 6 years.
No. Basically, what I mean is, do we turn him pro or send him back?
I see.
And so he can get stronger physically. He gets stronger mentally. He can goalies. We drafted a goalie this year that's playing in Russia, and somebody said, "Well, yeah, why'd you do that for? He's got 2 years left on a contract. Good, play. Stay over there and play." I remember the day I walked into the New York Rangers practice facility. I was broadcasting Ranger games, and it was the start of camp. And I leaned on a glass, and the net was right there. And there's this new goalie in net. And it was Henrik Lundqvist. And I believe he was 22 or 23 years of age. And I'm going, holy, is this guy good? I didn't know this. Is this guy ever good? You could see within a minute and a half how good he was. But he stayed over there and played. Mm-hmm. He stayed over there and played. He wasn't rushed and all that stuff. So there's a real dynamic there with yourself as the boss and your general manager and your scouts and your this and your that to make the right decision. And it's hard. It's really hard. Drafting is, I think, more important now, and it's going to get even more important as we move forward.
Okay, there's two things I can follow up on that. First of all, we always talk about goaltenders needing extra years, they're better at 25 than they are at 22. Is that same for skaters too, or do you think there's a real difference for goaltenders?
I think probably the difference for goalies has always been the odd one. I mean, Tommy Barrasso stepped in and played. Actually, I was the first one to ever play in the NHL out of junior. Mm-hmm. That was in 73. And when I finished my year, actually, I got injured with a knee with about 6 weeks left. And I've often thought about that year. I probably should have been in the minors for a year just to learn pro life. I'm coming out of junior. I was living with my parents in Calgary, playing for the Calgary Centennials, which was a fantastic experience playing junior hockey in Western Canada. I saw, it was just great. And now I'm in St. Louis, number 5 pick overall, and I'm looking around, and there's the Plager brothers, there's Gary Unger, there's Red Berenson, there's all these guys. And sure enough, I make the team. And it was different. I was 19 years old. These guys were 35 years old. The whole thing. I remember Dan Blackburn, a goalie with the Rangers who turned pro at the same age, actually came and lived with me and my wife at our home. He ended up injuring a nerve in his back and had to retire. He was just a kid. And he came up to me one day and he said, "You know, Mr. Davids," I said, "John, come on, it's John." He says, "This isn't easy." I says, I know, Dan, that's why you're living with us. We're trying to help you." He says, "Well, if you go on the road and all these guys are in their 30s and they go to the steakhouse for dinner the night before the game, and I don't know what to do," that type of thing. So you have to make sure you take care of people. You have to understand, is that person with his upbringing really strong mentally? Is he ready to go or is he not? How is he physically when you talk with the doctors? You know, his upper body, his shoulders, and they need some strength. He may get hurt. And sure enough, you can have an 18-year-old playing and get hit in the corner. Next thing you know, his shoulder's banged up. So you got, because he doesn't have the mass to protect himself. So it's a real interesting dynamic when you work your way through this whole thing.
So you'd like a 20-year-old draft?
safer. It's safer for the player, and it's safer for the league and the teams to make good decisions. However, it's against the law.
Right. I know.
You remember the days of the WHA and the and all that stuff with those lawsuits. Young players want to play. I mean, they're more ready now than they've ever been, but still it's a very expensive part of the business. And if you're wrong, it gets even worse.
Have you seen Matthew Schaefer play yet?
Yes. Yes. And love him. I mean, when you're the number one pick, you expect really good stuff. But this one here is something else. I've talked to some people with the Islanders, and you know, when you've been around a long time, and you and I both have, I'm 53 years, I think, in the league now, you can see through a lot of BS.
Yeah.
You really can. you can say, okay, that guy's full of you know what. But this kid's real, I think. He's real. You could see his upbringing, the death of his mom, which I had at the same time. Mine was 19 when my mother passed just before I turned pro. And you can sense how that feels with the individual. But to watch him play, to watch the joy in his game, to watch the joy of playing at home and being part of the the fans feel like that's their son playing. That's my kid. You know, it's like he should be in my living room. He's fit that franchise. Now, if you find people like that, A, who can really play, B, it's like an instant karma with your whole franchise. Your whole franchise. That's setting those people up on the island for a long time. I mean, that is a gift from God. You know, it just is. And I've also talked to some people there that expected really good things, but they're going, oh, this is way more than we thought. Not only on, but off the ice, the joy, the people loving to go watch him play. This kid is really special. And I'm really happy for him. I'm happy for the organization. Sometimes you just get lucky in a lot of ways. This is something special.
You put him on the Olympic team?
It's hard, but if you have an extra spot, because he's going to be on the next one if he keeps going like this, you'd look at it. But I think for the management, they have to, it's a short tournament. If you have real experienced players, Doughty's coming back. Do you put this kid ahead of Doughty, or does Doughty, you know what you're getting there, man. That's a competitor who's had lots of experience. So I'm not sure what their left D, right D, power play, penalty killing scheme is, but he certainly is something that should be talked about. I mean, he just should. These young players, these Celebrinis and Berards, they should be talked about. I watched Tom Wilson again last night. He should be talked about. This guy has become a great player. And he's kept his temper in check. A couple of times last night against Columbus, he could have blown the top right off his head and chased guys around. He took an elbow to the mush accidentally from Marchenko, but he didn't lose his mind over it. There was a play at the net where Matejchuk went in and clipped their goalie trying to get out of the way. And Wilson, in the old days, was like, boof, Ben, I'm going after you. He deserves discussion. This guy's a really good hockey player.
So you have been doing Olympics, around Olympics for a long time.
Yeah.
92. I think you were in Albertville in 92, were you?
Yeah. Yeah, I worked five of them, John. Salt Lake City, Albertville, which was France, Norway, Japan, and I forget, Italy.
And you went to Torino. You were in Torino.
Yeah, Torino, yeah. I found those, as a broadcaster, some of the greatest times of my life. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really enjoyed it. It was... It's a special time, because it's just the fans representing their countries come into the buildings, and they come in like, I remember sitting in the hotel room in Albertville. Oh, actually, it was up on the side of the mountain called Maribel, where the rink was. And you could hear the cowbells coming down. The Swiss were coming in into the town to go to the hockey game. Thousands of them. They're just, and they're having a blast, and it's the Olympics. It's really cool over there. It's a pretty special time.
Oh, the Swiss will be front and center for sure. It's not that far from Milan to Switzerland in the Alps. So the question is always is brought up. Okay, the players want to go, and we respect that, and that was part of the deal of what we went through in COVID and get the players there. But at what stake At what stake is it? Does it make sense when you consider the schedule they're going through? And yeah. And is there enough promotion and mm-hmm. enough after the game's hype to allow the NHL to say, you know what, this is, you know, yeah. it's an old cliche, grow the game, but do you yeah. allow it to grow the game?
This is a discussion we could have for 2 or 3 hours.
Sure.
When I went over there, and we have to understand, as a broadcaster, you want to go talk to coaches and players on both teams or all the teams and get information. It's a little easier now because you can text. But you want to go face-to-face with somebody and talk about, okay, this game, that, you know, whatever, to get information. And in turn, you're passing that on to the viewers. Now, it might be the hardcore hockey fan watching in Canada or the United States or wherever. It also could be new people who've never watched the game before. So you have to balance that and tell stories and give information. Well, it was like Fort Knox to try to get in to talk to anybody. It was ridiculous. So one time, I just had enough. I mean, I had enough. So I went and found Rennie Fizell, and who was running the hockey, and his press guy, Simon
Zemlich.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I said, okay, boys, we got to talk. This is enough. I says, everybody's spending a lot of money. We want to sell the game. We want the game to grow. And I can't even go talk to a coach because you got a barrier there and you got 16 guards and you can't go talk. So I made a deal with them that I was allowed to go talk only if I'd come back and tell all the other announcers what I learned. I said, that's great. I'm a team player. Let's do it. Well, every country will get good information so we can sell this. But that's what it took to do it. And I remember talking at a board meeting about the Olympics, whether it's worth going to. And I told that story. I said, if you guys as caretakers of our league can go to those people that are running the Olympics and find a way for everything to work to promote hockey and NHL hockey, and to be able to, once the Olympics are over, show the great goals. I remember in Albertville, the camera work with CBS was something else. Mm-hmm. And Keith Tkachuk diving through people, flying over, and scoring a goal. They couldn't show the footage because it was owned by them. Mm-hmm. And what do you gain out of that other than you have a chance to go as a player to win a medal? But, and that's cool. That's good. That's really good. The players want it and the league's listened. But at the same time, if you're, how about when they were in Vancouver and the owners couldn't even get in to watch the game? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's not right. They're selling out these hockey arenas with big money for these tickets. And the IOC at that time wouldn't even allow the owner of the Minnesota Wild or New York Rangers to get into the building or what. There was issues. That's not right. So, and I don't know where it sits now. I know that Gary and the players have a great relationship. I know that sounds like the league and the IOC have worked at it. If you can get it out of it, it's worth it. Now, injuries, it's scary. Well, it's scary.
But hockey, you get hurt.
I mean, that's right.
That's a fact.
There's two things here. There's condensed schedule and there's the Olympics themselves.
Right.
Injuries possible. We, as a team, have looked at our injuries over the last 5 years and our injuries so far this year, they're about even. Hmm. So we can't say, this guy's hurt, it's a condensed schedule. We can't say that because it hasn't proven to be factual. I can't talk about other teams, as I don't know. But injuries are part of it. But again, John, I think if you can maximize on what the Olympics are and you have the ability post-Olympics to use that to sell your sport and for young kids to see it and this and that and this and that, yeah, it makes some sense. But if you're going to be neutered and you can't have this and you can't have that, you can't have this, you can't talk to this guy or that guy, Then it's something to talk about. It's, you got to find a way.
Well, we've been around the game long enough. I'm not sure we got anything out of it after 98. And then everybody points their finger and says, well, it was because Canada, the United States weren't in the gold medal. 2002, we did get Canada, the United States in the gold medal. And I'm not sure we talked a lot more about the game of hockey. We drew that many more hockey fans after the Salt Lake City gold medal game. Same thing with Vancouver, Canada, the U.S., you know, the perfect storm. Game goes to overtime. Sidney Crosby. And did we get anything out of it from an NHL perspective? The players had a blast. The fans had a blast. But it did help grow the business. And I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. And I don't know if there's studies out there that show that one way or the other. I know personally going to these games. Here's a, I probably could write a book on this. You go to Salt Lake City, and in the quarter, the semis, the U.S. is playing Russia, and the U.S. wins.
You remember what time the game started?
In the afternoon. I know.
No. That was.
Well, I can't remember. I don't remember.
I remember Canada, USA played
Russia,
and then, on one window. We started at 9:30.
Oh boy. Yeah. But I remember after the game and the Russians, Fetisov, they were steamed. Refereeing this, that. So I'm talking to Slava behalf to the game, and he's pacing and he's talking. We knew each other pretty well. And all of a sudden the phone rang and he looks down and he goes, and his eyes went, "Boom, Putin." On the phone. Says, "I got to take this." I says, "You sure do." So he went and talked to him. And that was the same Olympics when Belarus beat Sweden.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I was so looking forward to a Canadian-Sweden game, just like the Russian game with the U.S., and ends up it's going to be Canada and Belarus. I'll never forget walking down, and I was allowed to because I worked my way, but I was walking to the Swedish locker room after the game, and the players came out of the room and they were wearing their team tracksuits or sweatsuits, and every one of them had their hands in their pockets, and in a hallway they were just walking and like robots, missing each other, walking, going down, turn around, coming back, shell-shocked. And I'll never forget that. And then of course Canada plays the U.S. Brett Hull had a chance on a one-timer, and Mike Richter Brodeur,
Marty Brodeur,
put his toe out on the goal line and stopped the shot with his toe. And I saw Brett Hull after that in St. Louis, I don't know, years later. I said, "Brett, how about that save? Marty, you're one-timer. You caught it. What a save." He goes, "My fault." I said, "What do you mean your fault? It was a hell of a save." He goes, "No, on those, you got to get them up. If I hit the top side there, it's a goal for sure. I missed it." I said, "Well, Marty made a hell of a save, but maybe you should have shot him up there, I guess." But the stories that you accumulate over the years, the Forsberg goal with the one hand going back the other way and around.
Lillehammer in 94.
I can't remember. I was out at a restaurant the other night in Naples. Six of us. It was a couple's birthday. And the table next to us had a bunch of loud people there. And they got up to go. And one of my buddies says, "Hey, what language you guys speak?" And they said, "Swedish." And they were drunken Swedes who had a blast. And so they move over. Next thing I know, one guy played on the national team for Sweden. One guy's wife was a Swedish player playing over here in university. Anyway, and this is going to kill me because I can't remember, I brought up the Forsberg goal because I was there broadcasting, and in my garage here, I have a stick autographed. Thought I'd mention that. But anyway, this guy told me where Forsberg learned that from, and who would, I'm going to have to call this guy because I can't remember. It was too late at night. It was too late at night, John. I can't remember.
I'm shocked.
You know what I mean? A couple of gins later, but he told me somebody taught Forsberg how to do that, and he used it to score the goal. Was that against Corey Hirsch?
It was.
I think yes. Yeah.
Corey Hirsch in the gold medal game.
That's right. Wasn't that something, that one? Holy smokes. So those memories are there. They're great memories. But at the same time, you've got to make sure as a league you find a way, and I'm sure they're working at it, to maximize. And I think you'd agree with me that the best way to maximize is be able to use the footage.
Sure.
To show highlights and replays of if Zach Werenski goes over there, allow Columbus to show some of his great things, and other teams, other players, Matthews or whoever it is. I mean, it's you got to maximize.
Particularly in this day and age when, let's face it, generations a lot younger than us don't watch whole games.
Yeah, that's true.
They only watch highlights.
Yeah, I know that there was The Athletic had a
conference. By the way, I think it was Kenta. Wasn't it Kent Nilsson?
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. How'd you know that?
I used to work in Calgary with Kent Nilsson, if you recall.
You're right. That's right. That's right. Because we were talking about Kent and Nilsson, Håkan Lube, and all these guys that played in Calgary on that team that actually knocked Edmonton off for a Stanley Cup.
Håkan was on that team in 94.
Yeah, right.
Mats Naslund, too.
Yeah, and now I don't have to call this guy back. Good. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, we go back to a point where Calgary versus Edmonton, great rivalry that Calgary-Edmonton, there were lots of people that used to say, they've got Gretzky, but we've got Kent Nilsson. And Kent Nilsson was that talented.
Oh, was he a great player? The last time I ever wore my goaltending equipment was in Calgary. So I'm there broadcasting with you, Flames games. And Bob Johnson, the great coach, Bob Johnson, says, hey, John, he's got the chin. Hey, John, wait, talk. I said, yeah, what's up, coach? Can you put your gear on and come on practice with us? I said, what? He says, you got your gear, don't you? I said, yeah, I got it. I says, okay, I'll give it a shot. He says, tomorrow, be here at noon. So I show up the next day. They give me a little room away from the team. I go put the stuff on. Haven't had it on for a long time. I was still in pretty good shape. Go on the ice. Their practice is just finishing up. They wanted me to be the goalie for the power play. Yeah. So I go in there after a number of shots. And so I look, and there's Kent Nilsson back there. There's Lanny McDonald.
Oh, my gosh.
Did he shoot the puck? Oh. And there's Joe Nieuwendyk. There was Håkan Lube, and I forget who else.
Well, Al MacInnis.
Al MacInnis, yeah. Lanny was up front. Al was back on the blue line. The time I finished practice, and I got out of it alive, and there was pucks going by. I could hear them. In practice, sometimes if a puck goes by your ear, you can hear it whistle going by. It's like a baseball when if you ever go up, whether it's AAA or whatever, and you're practicing with the guys, which I did, and there's nobody in the stands, the guy, and you let it go, the ball would snap into the catcher's mitt. You could hear the seams. Anyway, I got to the locker room, took the mask off, and I was as red as a lobster, and I've never put the gear on since. Not one, never even thought about it. I was lucky to get out of there alive. Lanny McDonald, Kent Nilsson, Håkan Lube, Joe Nieuwendyk. It was something else. And that Cliff Fletcher, he built that team. Bob Johnson coached. And was that great hockey when they played each other? Oh. The Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames in those days. That was special.
John, that's when they played 8 times a year.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That was the other thing. We had Lou on a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about get back to doing the schedule so you play the natural rivals a lot more. Yeah. Wouldn't you like to play Pittsburgh 3 at home, 3 on the road?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The places would be jammed.
Jammed.
They really would. Yeah, they really would. Whose jersey was it that Risebrough pulled off and decided to throw it on the floor in a penalty box and stomp him with his skate
blades? I want to say that was Kevin McClellan's, but I want to say
just another one of those things back in those days.
Yeah, those were fun. That was fun days.
Yeah. Both teams, it was great.
Thanks for this.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks. We got the world straightened out again.
Well, we got 3 more hours to discuss the Olympics and whether they're worth it.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, John.
John Davidson. Darren and I'll be back on 100% Hockey after this.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
I enjoy listening to you and JD catch up.
Well, it wasn't the first time with just the two of us been talking. We've done that a few times.
He's doing more TV than I expected.
He's Mr. Monday, right? Mm-hmm. Because of Jody Shelley's commitments to Amazon Prime and Monday Night Hockey in Canada. So that, the people of FanDuel and the Blue Jackets have been kind enough to allow Jody to do a few of the games. But that's a pretty good substitute to have John Davidson come out of the bullpen and do color for the Blue Jackets on those nights. He hasn't changed his work habits, though, I could tell you that right now. When he walks into a dressing room after the morning skate, he'll have a yellow legal pad, and he'll be writing things down left and right all night long. And he'll have – and then the measure of his success will be, how'd you do? I got 6 pages of notes. I got 6 pages. And the key thing, if you're a broadcaster, is that you don't necessarily have to use all 6 pages that night. You can save it. You can file them away. Or if you get a really bad game, you're going to dip in and use every note possible.
What do you think of Columbus this year? They're hanging in there.
Yeah.
A little inconsistent in their own end.
I'm rather disappointed, actually. I thought they would be better. I thought they were going to make the leap in a sense that Anaheim has made. Now, I'm not suggesting, lead the division, but I expected them to be a healthy number over 500. Now, they lost Boone Jenner for a while, so the Jenner injury has been difficult because there's no doubt that he's a leader on that club. I think their goaltending has been okay. But
I think just okay. They're 3 games over 500 and they've squandered some points.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And Dean drives them hard. Dean drives them hard. And you do wonder on a tough season like this, schedule wise, is how to manage that on a daily basis. And I'm not saying I know anything, but I see his intensity and I'm not sure you can be that intense for 82 games. I have had that talk with a couple of other coaches and they admitted that you have to find different ways to communicate all the time.
What do you think of the hand pass that the challenge went against Columbus on the weekend?
I would have called it a hand pass.
Yeah.
But I haven't talked to anybody. They were all on their way to Colorado Springs. So
hand pass is a murky one and it's popped up a couple of times.
Well, the John Cooper thing on Thursday, and I think that's why Dean called it. I think that quite frankly, I think that Dean called it on the basis of John Cooper's tirade after the game saying, well, if that's a hand pass, which was Brendan Hagel actually just blocking things as opposed to, Brad Marchand, in my opinion, was doing a comb over with the puck. He was like trying to get some hair and move it to the other side. But
he was trying to grab the puck and he touched the puck, but he didn't actually accomplish what he was attempting to do.
No, right. But listen, everything that Brad Marchand does these days is turned to gold, right?
Well, I think he's playing the best hockey of his career. And this is a guy that's had a 100-point season.
Better than 2016 when he and Bergeron were like night lights out.
I truly believe that his impact night to night, shift to shift, not just when they're scoring, he's making plays. It's blowing me away. And I'm watching more Florida Panther games because of Brad Marchand.
I shudder to think where they'd be without him.
When
you consider that he was a 235 day of the trade deadline acquisition. Mm-hmm. I mean, he made the phone call to a friend within the Florida Panthers office to say, okay, if you guys trade for me, I'll show up. That to me, they would. I don't think they would have won the Stanley Cup without him either. So, I mean, his impact in the short period of time has been remarkable, and obviously he got rewarded with that 6-year deal.
The most impressive thing that I've seen him do was the helmet destroying of Rasmus Dahlin's bucket, and right up there with it was something he did in the game against Columbus the other night in overtime. Columbus is on the power play. Dean Evason and company call a timeout and they're all gathered around Haviland on the bench. And all of a sudden the players all snap around and they're yelling and the coaches are yelling. And I don't know what they're upset about. Are they yelling at the referees? Cause there was a couple of issues with the referees. It turns out Brad Marchand was just trolling, sliding by the huddle of the Columbus Blue Jackets, glancing in at the whiteboard, and he totally disrupted the timeout. It was one of the best in-game moves that had nothing to do with actual action I've ever seen.
I'm surprised more guys don't do that. Seriously. If you're
Have you ever seen him do that before? I haven't.
I have not seen him do it before. I have seen others do the skate by and lean in.
Good.
I'm surprised that there aren't, more shit disturbers doing that, quite frankly. Why not? I could see Corey Perry doing that.
Yes, absolutely. And there's nothing illegal about it. I guess you could deuce them for unsportsmanlike conduct, but
well, how can you?
You're not going to really do that.
I don't know how you could do it. I mean, he's just skating by.
It was outstanding, and it knocked everything off kilter. Going into that,
this does speak to a lot to your personality, though.
Yes,
it does speak a lot of that. You know, you like to poke the bear, and you like to to tease, and you like to
disrupt
everything.
Yes,
nobody's going to notice, but there you are, just poke, right?
Yes.
Were you like that as a player?
I chirp a lot.
You have to lock
chirped a lot,
but you have to stop the puck to chirp a lot.
Yeah, not really. If you're confident in your chirps,
no, trust me, you have to stop the puck to have an effective chirp.
I still have fun with the chirping, because if that's the case, I wouldn't be as talkative as I am.
Well, maybe
that would take things away.
Maybe you should take note of that then.
Chicago had a tough end to that California trip.
Yeah, but I you have to expect that with a young team, with a team that's maturing. I have no issue with it. I really don't. I don't expect them to make the playoffs. I do expect them to be better. I think they've already been better. The growth we've seen in Connor Bedard is tremendous. I think Spencer Knight's going in. I think that, 2 years ago in Chicago, or the year before Bedard showed up, I think a lot of people thought there was no hope in Chicago. There was nothing that they could do to make it an attractive place to go as a fan, as a player. Well, here we are 2.5 years later, and there's hope. And there are some really good parts to that team. I think Jeff Blashill's the right coach at the right time. From that perspective, I think adding Mike Pekka was a smart move. So from that perspective, everything is going according to some level of a positive plan in Chicago. Yeah, it was ugly. But at the same time, I think that things are so much better than they were. When you look at the Nazars and Bedard and some of Vlasic, some of these young guys that are going to be there hopefully for a while, that team is going to be impactful in a couple of years. Just we could have said the same thing about Anaheim 3 years ago, and look at where the Ducks are now. And the Ducks are, gosh, their Ducks are so fun to watch. They might be, for the decade of the 2010s, Darren, I stayed up late to watch the San Jose Sharks every night because the Sharks were that good, entertaining, broadcast was good. I now do the same thing with the Ducks. If the Ducks are on, I watch. Because they're that much fun.
Do you watch Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I always watch Vegas. Because
I don't get many notes from you.
I can't miss Gary Lawless.
Well, that's a Millard shot right there.
It is.
A little more subtle than I am, but that's a Millard shot.
Well, you know what? Gary Lawless is he's a star. So, I like watching stars. They're good.
Carter Hart's been fantastic in his two games.
Yeah, it was. That's a smart move too to put him in Vegas. Get the cobwebs out and then start on this road trip. This is a tough road trip for them. It's not going to be easy, but they're doing the right thing and playing well right now. Mike Sullivan was mad, huh?
That was an interesting one. So in the waning seconds of regulation, the referees called offsetting minors, and it created a 4-on-4 situation.
Yeah.
And Sullivan went bonkers. The bench.
Yeah.
And why he was upset was he knew it was going to set up a 5-on-4 with the extra attacker, and that's more easily executable, more familiar for players than 6-on-5.
You have a better chance to score.
Yeah, than 6-on-5.
Sure.
And he was it was almost a precursor to what was going to happen because he knew it was an advantage for Vegas.
I tell you what, though.
And they scored and they won in overtime.
Right. The maturity of a veteran coach. At the end of the game, he was so mad and he wanted to just rip the referees again. And he bit his tongue and he turned and looked at them and he stopped and then he turned and looked at them again and then he walked off the bench.
I don't think he had anything left.
No, it was fascinating to watch. But that's okay. I didn't mind that because they got the overtime point on Saturday with that late goal from Panarin. And then the similar thing happened to them on Sunday with Vegas scoring late to force the overtime. Unfortunately for the Rangers, they lost both games in the extra time.
I've never seen a coach more upset when his team wasn't called to be shorthanded.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, just something we are now seeing, particularly with Eastern Conference teams or teams that only go to Los Angeles once, is we're seeing all the teams show their tremendous amount of respect for Anze Kopitar at the end of the game. Chicago losing 6-0 could have easily skated off the ice, but the Blackhawks waited and waited, and then they all shook Kopitar's hand. And to me, that's, you know, we can wax poetic about what the things we like about our game and what the game stands for. That sportsmanship and that respect for one of the great players to ever play the game is something I can never get too much of.
Yeah, I don't know what the first team was that did.
I thought it was Washington, but that was the one, that was the first one I saw. So I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Impressive though the respect and much deserved.
What if he Olympic changes his mind?
Well, I heard that about Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah. And
there was some scuttlebutt that he might come back and play. And the most popular take that was circulating came from guys that went to the retirement party in Montreal saying, well, if he comes back and plays even one game, he better have another party.
How come you didn't get invited to that party?
I had a conflict.
Oh, okay.
It's
I had conflict. All you do is create conflict. Are you kidding me?
You expecting some news out of the Olympic meetings? Any type of number of names that they've agreed on to come out of it?
I think we're only going to hear who won the golf tournament. Because invariably, you know, they're in Florida for 3 days. They're going to play golf at some point.
Thought there'd be some pickleball, too.
Well, there might be pickleball for the older guys, but there's going to be a little bit of golf, a little bit of discussion. Yeah. For any way to drag this sucker out for 3 days, congratulations to them. I mean, that's
I know.
I don't think so. I mean,
we moved the National Hockey League up 4 teams in 7 minutes, and it took some prodding from me, but we got there.
Yeah. Well, listen, there might be a bigger discussion on the afternoon draw for the golf tournament than there is about who's going to play defense.
We expanded the National Hockey League to 36 teams and made Gary Bettman and company $8 billion in 7 minutes.
No. The second group of teams might be $3 billion.
All right, so we'll give them 10. We made them $10 billion. We could do an Olympic team selection. Give me 30 minutes and we could do it.
I tell you what, we could do it in 30 minutes, but as long as we win, we'd be successful. If we don't win, there wouldn't be any more 30 minutes anymore.
Oh, by the way, the Hockey Hall of Fame and the...
Foster Hewitt Award?
Foster Hewitt Award.
Yeah.
Changing some guidelines.
Yes. They're adding the studio people into the equation.
You must be so happy with this.
Relieved more than anything else. They're finally we're going to be in a position that people who have deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
What got them over the hump? I should have done this much earlier in the program.
I don't know. There's been a few people. John Buttrigross, Steve Simmons have been advocating heavily for it. There's been a couple of emails that were sent with a group of 15 or 16 Hall of Famers, real Hall of Famers, not Foster Hewitt Award winners, that suggested that the rules should change. So I think the bigger changing of the guard is that there's a changing of the guard on the Broadcasters Association side, mm-hmm. and I think they realize the error of their ways. So it's good, you know, that means when the announcements come out next year, early next year, like April, we're going to hear that possibly, not necessarily, but possibly a host will be winning the Foster Hewitt Award. And you know, at least now we know that when we nominate them, because we have nominated them before, they didn't get consideration. Now, at least they are going to receive consideration. And I think that's all we can ask.
So this is Don Cherry, right? He's now eligible to go in.
In theory. Yeah. But Don, I think Barry Melrose.
Yeah.
Who has done it.
Ron McLean. But I'm trying to give some people some names.
I think the guy at the top of the list, in my personal opinion, is Dave Hodge.
Okay.
Dave Hodge is not in the Hall of Fame in that category yet, and I think he deserves to be and has deserved to be for 20 years.
Got a good list to work from.
Yeah. There's a pool of talented people that have been great ambassadors for the game that now deserve a chance for recognition. That doesn't mean everybody's going to be happy when the name comes out next year, but it's a step in the right direction.
Progress. That's what we aim to do.
That's what we do. Well, we're up to 36 teams.
So. Exactly. Eight to $10 billion. I wonder what my finder fee for that is. I just gave them four cities.
You did it yourself.
You helped out.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, you had to be convinced to take part. Speed up the process. Not going to get to 36 teams and 10 years waiting around for that.
You are. You're going to have to.
Have a good couple of days. What do we got for the rest of the week?
Rick Tockett Wednesday, Chris Pronger Friday.
Rocket and two mean guys. Two tough guys.
Oh, they're not mean. They're pussycats.
Yeah. Well, Tockett's a rough exterior, but underneath, most amazing guy. Pronger loves the rough exterior, and he can be a little hard on the inside too. We'll talk to you next time. Share it, like it, and let everybody know what you love about 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
And remember, if somebody says in the conversation, 100%
Hockey.
I used that today on the radio. I told the boys. Scott Lachlan and Gordy Stellick. I said, I told the whole story of 100%. So we're going to ingrain this in people's minds. It's the only publicity we can afford. So,
Well, we'll be fine once I get my finder's fee for the 10 billion.
You're not sharing. If you get a finder's fee, you ain't sharing that. Are you kidding me?
I'm going to go spend it right now.
Yeah.
Talk to everybody next time.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.